Say hello to a new friend on an old road. Take a two-lane trip of memories into mysteries unknown. Come along for the ride. Jim Hinckley's America. Jim Hinckley's America.
Hey, good morning, everyone. How's everyone doing this morning? Miss Terry Ryburn's with us. Get started here. We'll get a little bit of the business of Route 66 out of the way first. Give a shout out to our good friends at the Wagon Wheel Motel in Cuba, Missouri. Connie Eccles there is a wonderful host. And of course, the Wagon Wheel Motel and the Roadrunner Lodge in Tucumcari, New Mexico. They're more than just mere motels. They are living time capsules. That's where the very essence of the Route 66 adventure is personified. And we'll give a good shout out to our good friend there, Louis Keene, who's on the road to recovery down at Urena's Fudge Company and General Store near Lebanon, Missouri. If you're into juvenile humor, well, you've got to stop at Urena's Fudge Company and General Store. And if you are offended by juvenile humor, get a picture of the great neon sign and then head down the highway. A few quick updates. I'll be posting some information today about Scoops on 66 here in Kingman. They're doing some pretty amazing things down there. They brought new life to an old diner that has been closed for over two decades. Pretty exciting. My fall tour schedule is coming together. If you're interested in scheduling something, the presentation, speaking engagement, the window is closing pretty quick. I've got most of the dates set, and I can provide information on that if you give me a holler. And let's see what we've got going here. Miss Terry, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great. Beautiful sunny day. Looking forward to meeting people today as my shop is open 9 to 5:30.
And what shop is that, young lady?
Well, I have a gift shop, Ryburn Place, that's in the Sprague's Super Service in Normal, Illinois.
Terry, that the story of how you preserved and brought that place to life, that's one for the books. That should be an educational program.
Well, it certainly was an education for me.
And we have Miss Cheryl Jett with us. Cheryl, how are you doing this morning?
Hey, I'm just fine, Jim. It's good to be on here with both of you.
Well, it's good to have smiling faces here with us this morning. Hope the weather's good there. It's a nice, balmy 64 degrees here in sunny Arizona this morning.
Say, that sounds pretty good for Arizona.
It has been a delightfully odd and unusual summer, to say the very least. But now we can try for fall.
Absolutely.
Well, I like fall, Jim, except, actually, I'd like it better if I didn't know what was coming.
Well, you know, the biggest problem I had, that some years ago, Bob Russell offered me a pretty good job there in Pontiac. We were talking, and I explained to Bob that, you know, I and my wife and I both, we just love Pontiac immensely. The only thing we could find wrong with it was in Illinois. And I already did my winters in Michigan and Minnesota and Montana.
Yeah.
No, it gets below 80. I look for my long underwear.
There you go. Yeah. Well, I'm closed here January, February, so that's when I do my traveling, and I do go someplace warmer.
Well, if you find yourself out this way, holler. I'll give you the 50-cent tour.
Okay, appreciate that.
Well, you know what we say in Illinois, Jim, if you don't like the weather, you know, you just wait an hour or so, and you'll get something completely different.
You know, that's the way it's gotten out here. We usually have anybody who says Kingman doesn't have seasons hasn't lived here for a week. Yeah, we get some pretty crazy sometimes. I've seen it 105 degrees here, and the next day at 60 degrees.
Wow, that's quite an extreme.
Yeah. So you two have been, as if you guys don't have enough to do, Terry with her shop and restoration project, and Cheryl's always writing and coming up with something new. You've got the Miles of Possibility Conference. coming up here at October 20th, 19th and 20th.
19th through the 22nd.
You know, I for one am so grateful for the efforts that you put in with this, because it's sorely needed to have an event that's a little bit of fun, but it's mostly the business of Route 66, and that is something that is sorely needed.
Well, you know, we like to think
that. Cheryl told me this started with you, with an idea that you had, as many of the positive things that happen on Route 66 have started with you and a few other folks with a vision. So we have to give you credit for the idea of starting sort of a, well, I want to say academic educational conference, which we have continued.
Well, you know, it's a team effort. It's not a gym show or anything. It's a team effort. In 2014, we hosted the Route 66 International Festival in Kingman, and one of the ideas we had was to put together a conference, 2 or 3 days at the crossroads of the past and future, and nobody wanted to continue it here, and Cheryl actually had the idea of trying to sell this in Edwardsville. So she went back to Edwardsville and started doing some really serious pinata impersonations as she tried to sell the idea. And, yeah. And then you and Debbie and...
I attended that first conference and it was absolutely wonderful. It was so energetic and the momentum that came out of that conference. But Cheryl had only intended to do it 1 year because of that pinata aspect that you have mentioned. Finding it difficult to get money. I mean, it does cost money to host a conference and volunteers. And I mean, it was quite a struggle for her. So as an audience or a participant, I went to Cheryl during that conference and I said, Cheryl, it would be a shame to let this die. You know, we've got so much forward momentum and so much energy and interest. So I said, what would you think if I took it to Bloomington Normal next year and then we'll find somebody in the north to host it the following year and we will rotate this through Illinois. So we're not always at the same place because people might say, oh, I've already been there. You know, I know that area. So that's what we've done. We have continued this. I have hosted it twice and this will be fine. We're hosting in Bloomington Normal this October. Debbie Jo Erickson in Joliet worked very, very hard to put on a conference up there. We've also had it in Carlinville. So we work on this year round, Jim. As soon as this one's done, we'll do a post-mortem, figure out what worked, what didn't, look at our evals and figure out, you know, what it is that we didn't do or should do or things. And there were things that we did extremely well. I mean, we also get those comments, but we start working on it in November, you know, as soon as the conference is over, planning the next one.
Well, between Cheryl and you and Debbie Jo, I'll tell you, this is quite a deal. And, you know, you mentioned all the aggravations and things with this. Well, you know, there's always a silver lining. The silver lining is when you take on projects like this, you never have to look for an excuse to drink.
No, you're absolutely right about that. We meet on Zoom now, which has really, really improved things, because before we would have to, you know, drive here because this being central, you know. Yeah. And so it was a real challenge for them. And now that we can do Zoom, we meet every other week and pretty soon we'll start meeting every week on Zoom. So we can resolve a lot of things by Zoom, by email. It really has become remarkably efficient.
Well, you know, I really wish that we could get more participation from the West End and some of the other states. And we're starting to see that. I understand Greg Hassman from Albuquerque will be in attendance.
Yep.
And some folks there from Oklahoma. And that's good. We need more of that participation. And of course, with Marion Pavel, you've got the international aspect.
Right.
You've always managed to get such a good slate of speakers. Dr. Baker is incredible. I had the privilege of meeting him a few years ago.
He's really an excellent get for this conference. He did not buy here many years ago. I can't remember what year it was now. I'm sure he'll talk about it during his program. But he was driving that old Ford.
Yes.
I forget what year it is. Yep. And doing the entire road. And he had it parked out front. Well, one of my artists that I tap here locally just happened to be here. And he was doing a drawing of my building. And so he's got that. I've got that on a postcard with T. Baker's old Ford parked out front. So people think he just made up that, you know, oh, he just put in this car, wagon, or whatever it is. But no, it was actually parked out front when my artist was here.
You know, Cheryl, I've got somebody, since you're associated with Root Magazine.
Yep.
I have a fella that I'm going to introduce you to. He goes on Facebook by the name of Tebow Barn. And fascinating young man. He's probably 40. And at my age, that's still a kid. But
that's the way I'm looking at it these days.
He is. He's quit his full-time job. COVID kind of gave him a reevaluation of life. He's obsessed with Model A and Model T Fords. And he regularly, that's what he drives. He did a Route 66 trip during COVID in a 29 Ford. He's recently acquired a Stanley Steamer. And oh, he's wow. now, he wow. lives in New Hampshire. He currently goes on a little weekend tours, 200-300-400 miles with his Stanley Steamer. And he's thinking about organizing a Model A, Model T cruise for the Route 66 Centennial.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
But you think he'd make a great story for you.
You know, I think so too. And, you know,
Jim, I can't tell if Cheryl is on. Is she on? I can't hear her.
Yeah, Cheryl's with us.
Oh, I'm sorry. I hope I haven't interrupted Cheryl.
No, no, you're fine. I'll tell you, I'll keep this. I'll try to run interference here.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right. Referee, you, I apologize if I have stepped on things she said or wanted to say.
No, you're doing fine. I'll let Cheryl answer a couple things here real quick, Terry. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Yeah. You know, I have to confess, and I'm not sure anybody's really missed me, but I have taken a hiatus from Root Magazine almost this entire year to devote my time to the book project, which you know about. And so I will be, in case anyone has missed me, I will be back with some great new stories in Root Magazine this coming year, beginning with the February-March issue, I think. So. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to getting in contact with this young gentleman because sounds like he's got some great ideas.
I'll put you in touch with him. For the folks who are just joining us, what Terry was mentioning there, we're doing this as the best Mayberry, or if you're a fan of Hee-Haw, Charlie Farquharson's radio program, that's the way I operate this. We have Terry on the phone, so she can't hear Cheryl. And so we're trying to juggle the two. It's definitely going better than a couple of weeks ago when we had the folks from the Historic Electric Vehicle Foundation, and we were trying to juggle two phone calls, one from Croatia and one from Seattle.
Oh, my goodness.
That got really interesting. Cheryl, you've got a couple of book projects going, the Women on Route 66. That one's one I'm eagerly awaiting.
You know, that has turned. To, I think at this point, it's a 7-year project, but if I don't look out, it's going to be an 8-year project. And I just kept collecting stories, some of which you have clued me into, which I much appreciate. You know, I started this book, a little writer talk here. I started that book the way we usually begin a Route 66 book. We almost always divide up our sections or our chapters into states as we are traveling westward.
Yes.
And that didn't work for this. It completely didn't work. And once I finally admitted to myself that that didn't work and started going more by, I guess you would say, categories, then it started to flow. So the overall list of chapters is more or less chronological, but the chapters, we'll do a few little teases here. One chapter is entitled The Female Built Environment, which gives you a clue that Mary Coulter and a number of other female architects are going to be included. Early adventurers, and you have shared stories about quite a few of them. The legends, design and material culture, feeding the travelers, motels and lodging, law and order or the lack of it, etc., etc. So anyway, I'm at about 80,000 words and I'm slogging through the second draft and I'm just about to send out the first three chapters in a proposal.
Very good. Terry, you know, and Cheryl both, one of the things I'll be talking about at the Miles of Possibility Conference is the dawning of the American road trip. And we have a tendency to, history in general, it gets diluted. It's like a good vegetable stew. Everything settles to the bottom and we skim the top.
Yeah.
But the role of women in development of automobiles in travel is really an overlooked component. When you think of Florence Lawrence, there, the movie star. Yep. She was involved in motoring, high-speed performance. She was a mechanic, an inventor. And she was doing this at a time when the Jackson automobile was being promoted as a car that was so easy to operate, a child or even woman could drive it. Yeah, that goes over real well today.
Terry has written about, and I don't think Terry can hear me, but Terry has written about Aloha Wanderwell.
Aloha
Wanderwell.
Can you fill us in on that, Terry, the Aloha Wanderwell?
Oh my gosh, I haven't looked at that material for a long time. This was a woman who essentially left home. She was very young, and she wandered the world and renamed herself Wanderwell. And she had such wonderful adventures, you know. She was actually, there's an image of her with the car that they traveled. I think they had two cars. The car she traveled in parked on the Great Sphinx in Egypt back in the 20s. You know, horrifying now, of course, with preservation. But, she met the most interesting people on her trip. She had, of course, through Africa, you know, just even getting petrol, as she referred to it. That's a wonderful story.
There's so many of these stories that in the period between 1805 and roughly 1930, aside from today, the internet and the Zoom and all these technological changes, that 1885 to 1930 period is just extraordinary. And I cannot believe how many stories have fallen through the cracks. And we've talked about this, I think, with Cheryl once or twice on Bessie Stringfield.
Yes.
You know, not only traveling the United States and Haiti and South America on a motorcycle as a single woman, but as an African-American woman in the 20s and 30s. That's pretty extraordinary.
It really is. And you know,
Cheryl mentioned that she's doing a program during the conference called Dreams, Dares, and Driving, Early Women Cross-Country Motorists.
Hey, so, Cheryl, would you like to comment on that?
Well, we're going to cover a few, and I've given a number of programs before on some of these early women drivers, so I haven't decided for sure which ones I'm going to cover this time, but I'll probably talk about Darlene Dorgan and the Gypsy Coeds from up around the Peoria, Illinois, because everybody loves that story when I tell it. And Darlene was one of several daughters. Excuse me. Oh, I'm sorry for that. Allergies. And she wanted to go to college, and her father, Bill Dorgan, was one of those fathers of that time period that thought college money was wasted on girls. So she still kicked up a fuss about it. So he built her he sent her to beauty school, and then he built her a beauty shop in their basement. But she still wasn't happy with her dad, and so he bought her a old Ford touring car, and she organized trips for 8 or 9 years with various sisters and girlfriends. And it was women-only trips, and one of those years they did travel Route 66. So, and she had met Henry Ford and started a correspondence with him. So that's a fun story that will certainly be one of them that I will tell.
Very good. Terry, you know, we mentioned at the beginning of this about your preservation efforts there, and you have preserved and not only an important part of Route 66, but an important time capsule in the evolution of the roadside America. And you had quite a challenge with that. But
well, I certainly did, Jim. But anybody who tries to preserve or restore something along the road is challenged. Do you want to hear the story about how I bought it?
Yes, please.
Okay, well, Sprague Super Service was built in 1930 by a local contractor. He opened it as a city service gas station with a cafe and a two-bay garage. So it was very unusual then to have an attached cafe with your gas station garage, unlike now where every gas station has a McDonald's or a Subway. And also very unusual to have a two-bay attached garage. He had pits in the floor so his mechanic could get underneath the cars and work on them year round. And, you know, in 1930, most of the little gas stations, if they had a garage at all, it was just kind of a little lean-to. So anyway, he built what he wanted, including two apartments upstairs. So there's one that he built for he and his wife, and it's the size of the whole downstairs. It's absolutely huge for two people. Includes a sunroom out over the gas pumps. And then he built a small apartment for the mechanic or the attendant. So again, very smart for everybody to live right on site. He could feed you. He could sell you car parts out of his office, you know, fan belts or oil. He could repair your car. And if you didn't have a car because it was the Depression and some people didn't have one or couldn't afford to run it or couldn't get parts, he was a Greyhound bus stop. So he figured out what do people need? What do travelers need? And he supplied it. And he supplied it in this beautiful two-story Tudor Revival style building. It's an incredible building. I'm sure some of your listeners have seen the image online or perhaps have even stopped here. But how I came to buy the building, it was an accident, Jim, I have to confess. I lived in the neighborhood. My husband and I lived about maybe two blocks away. And we'd drive by this all the time. And every time I would say to him, oh, I wish somebody would buy that and fix that up. Because every time I could see it just looked a little worse and a little worse. Because no one actually maintained the building. You know, after William Sprague sold it, he had it 10 years, so 1930 to 40. And then the Beltline went four-lane Route 66 went around Bloomington Normal. So he sold it, went through a number of hands, just was never kept up. So anyway, you know, it just, as I said, just looked worse and worse. So when the for sale sign went up, being nosy, you know, one of those nosy Parker types, and also being so vested in Route 66, because I had written my dissertation about Route 66 to get my doctorate in history. Plus, I was pretty active then in the Route 66 Association of Illinois. I called my realtor and I said, I want to go inside, look at this building, but I'm not buying it. And he said, oh yeah, I'll show it to you. And I said, well, I'm not buying it. I hate to waste your time, but I really, really want to see inside. So he said, oh yeah, I'll meet you over there. So we came in, and Jim, it was worse inside than it was outside. The roof had leaked. And you know, if you have water, it destroys everything, ceilings, walls, floors. And the first words out of my mouth were, what kind of a crazy person would buy a dump like this? Well.
And then you saw the mirror.
Yeah. Then I went upstairs. We went upstairs, and the sun was shining in that day. The room that's out over the gas pumps was a sunroom with 9 windows. And so it was shining on that quarter sawn oak floor. And even though the floor was in terrible condition, I thought, you know what? I'm going to make a low offer and she won't take it. But I can tell my Route 66 friends, I tried to save that building. You know, they might think I was kind of a hero. So I made the offer, and I was right. She didn't take it. But she came back with kind of a low counter or a counter offer that wasn't too bad. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to raise it the slightest bit. And she won't take that either. But I can tell my friends, man, I really tried to save that building. I made two offers on that building. Well, she took it. So, oops.
Yep.
You know, I bought a dump.
Famous last word.
And then the hard part, well, not really hard. I had to go home and tell my husband I bought it. Ooh. And yeah, because I had mentioned it to him, you know, my money. So anyway, I went home and I said, Bill, you know that building over there on Pine Street? I'm always saying somebody ought to buy that and fix it up. And he said, yeah. And I said, well, you know, it's for sale. And he said, yeah. Well, I went and looked at it. He said, really? And I said, yeah. And I made an offer. See how I was leading up to that, Jim? And he said, really? And I said, and she took it. And I swear to you, there were two beats. And that man said, when do we move?
There you go. Yeah. There
yeah,
you go.
He loved me so much. He would have lived in a tent in a mud field if it made me happy. So anyway, we sold our beautiful home and we moved into this. And then the backstory on it is I had good credit. So the bank loaned me the money for this dump. And then I had to figure out how to get it restored because I didn't have any money. So I taught myself how to write grants. I got about $375,000 in grants. I got federal, state, and local, and I put about $90,000 out of pocket over the course of 10 years. So I slogged on this thing for 10 long, hard, horrible years. But I did get a boost occasionally. The preservation committee that John Weiss heads here in Illinois would come and help me. They have a motto, we'll work for food. So all you have to do is feed them. And they would come and work. And so I would, you know, when I got kind of low and thought, oh, why am I doing this? I mean, it was just horrible. They'd come and after they'd leave, I'd think, okay, well, somebody else sees the value. Somebody else understands the importance of this building. So anyway, I just, you know, slogged along for 10 years. And then the town of Normal approached me about buying it. And I kind of struggled with that. I kind of jokingly said, you watched me suffer and die for 10 long years. You couldn't have stepped in year one, year two. I wasn't really joking, but I said it jokingly. So I was reluctant to let go of it. Yeah. Because, you know, I put 10 years of my life in it. Those 10 years I'll never get back. And what if I sold it and they didn't do what I thought they should do?
Yeah.
You know, but so I had a lot of kind of sleepless nights, but I'd had sleepless nights because I worried about what will happen to this building when I die. You know, as often happens, as you well know, with old buildings, when the old folks die, the young kids don't want it. I have two daughters who live out of state. They have jobs and lives and kids. They're not coming back here to do this when I die. Yeah. You know, this is mom's crazy thing. So at any rate, we negotiated for a long time, the town and I, and I ended up selling this to the town in 2016. And the reason I did it was because they guarantee it won't be torn down.
Yes.
And I didn't have that promise on my own.
There you go.
So now I can sleep nights knowing that it's preserved. And Jim, that's all I ever wanted was to preserve this building.
You know,
I rent the gift shop space from the town. And I rent my apartment upstairs, and I have never been happier. I have so many interesting people who walk through the door. I've never had a job like that. I don't know about you, but I've never had a job where everybody who walks through that door is happy.
You know, we get used to, we can adapt to so many things in life, like stress, and it becomes normal. So,
yes.
You know, and then, so the next thing you know, you take on the Miles of Possibility contract.
Yeah.
Hey, Cheryl, speaking of the Miles of Possibility Conference, what is the website there? And I will, by the way, I have this on the Jim Hinckley's America website, but I'll get all the information from Terry's business, the building, and the Miles of Possibility up on social media later today.
Fabulous.
But Cheryl, what website do we
have? That website, if everyone would like to go check that out, is Route66MilesOfPossibility.com. And we do have everything up there now, except, well, there's one thing that we don't have up there, but I'll talk about that in a minute because that's still a little bit up in the air. But all of the actual conference information is on there. Hotels, parking, Wi-Fi, public transportation, the entire schedule, the link to register, and bios of all our absolutely amazing speakers and presenters, including you yourself, sir, and we are so happy that you will be there again. I think we have 18 speakers, something like that, this year. We really pulled out all the stops this year. We have 4 keynote speakers, including Mr. Jim Hinckley, Mr. Marian Pavel, Dr. T. Lindsay Baker, and from the Vanishing Postcards podcast, Evan Stern. So we're really excited for that lineup. Terry mentioned that I'll be doing a presentation on the early women adventurers.
Yes,
and
yes.
Terry will also be giving a presentation on the history of the Sprague Service Station.
Excellent. One of the programs you have that really surprised me and grabbed my attention. I've had the privilege of meeting Evan Stern, and I work a lot with Marian Pavel on the Route 66 navigation app. I'm currently updating the points of interest file, expanding. But you have Bill Kemp talking about the Henny Kilowatt.
Yes.
The reason that really jumped up and grabbed my attention is we've started the Embryonic Electric Vehicle Museum here in Kingman.
Yes.
And one of the cars that we have currently on display is a Henny Kilowatt.
Oh, how about that?
And there's about, from my understanding, there's about 24 of those little critters in the world.
Wow. I did not know that. Well,
yeah, Bill is Cheryl speaking? I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead, Terry, because you're the blooming tonight.
Archivist librarian at the McLean County Museum of History, and he just has a special interest in the early electric cars. So he is doing his presentation, The Henny Kilowatt, Bloomington's Battery-Powered Car of Tomorrow. He always does a great presentation, so I'm really looking forward to hearing about the history of the Henny Kilowatt.
I am too, and Cheryl and Terry, the Henny Kilowatt, for those people who aren't familiar, it really was a totally impractical, overly overpriced, perhaps that's why it didn't sell well. But it was an innovative idea. They used Renault Dauphine cars, and they converted them to electric with some help from GE. And so they're kind of an interesting blending.
Mm-hmm.
Cheryl, you know, on your writing projects, the one on the women is very, very important. It's very much needed. Do you have anything else simmering on the burner at this time?
I've got some maybes and I've got some ideas kind of simmering around, but nothing that I have to announce just yet.
You write for the Prairie Buzz, is that correct?
Prairie Land Buzz, that's kind of a central Illinois, you know, it's one of those newspaper format human interest things, you know, like most cities have got one of those, like St. Louis's Riverfront Times, etc. So I have been, I think September starts my 12th year of a monthly column for the Buzz. Yeah.
Young ladies, do you have any final things? I know, Terry, you got to get your shop going, and And I guys, I really appreciate this. I know we kind of juggled a bit here trying to do phone and computer, but I think this works out pretty well. Everybody seems pretty happy. Got lots and lots of questions here for you, people wanting to know what you got planned for the centennial already, Miles of Possibility. I know you've got some
Well, we've got a plan.
that's what I understand. Springfield, correct?
Yes. Yes, we're very, very excited about that. And the Visit Springfield Convention Visitors Bureau is very excited about that, too. So we don't have any details to announce yet.
No.
We've just secured venues and hotels and that sort of thing. So Springfield has so many resources. So as you know, in recent years with Miles of Possibility, or MOP as we shorten it to, that we have, since we have incorporated as a nonprofit, Debbie Jo, Terry, and I kind of come into a city with almost a package deal. You know, we gather input and, of course, seek approval from what we set up as a tentative program. But we really come in and do a lot of that planning for the city. But Springfield has so many resources and they have so many new attractions and great ideas that Springfield is really running with a lot of the plans. So we are very excited. We don't have the dates to share with you yet, but
no.
It will be October as it always is.
Debbie Jo is the third musketeer, and you guys together are quite a team. You know, one that I'm curious about with Springfield, and I'll, of course, ask these questions when I get back there to Illinois, not just Springfield, but all the way across the board, I'm surprised that I haven't heard more mention of linking the 250th anniversary of the United States of America with the centennial of Route 66.
That is a point for our association with Springfield for 2026.
I'm assuming with our presidential connections.
Yes, absolutely. Because, you know, as you and mostly everyone knows, that's land of Lincoln. And so we will be stressing that connection.
You know, Terry, Cheryl, I really want to thank you two for taking time for your schedule to do this today. The whole reason, the idea behind this is to inspire road trips by telling people where to go and sharing America's story. And by talking about the conference, we're definitely telling people where to go. And, you know, with your restoration of that property, that's definitely writing a chapter in America's story.
Thank you. Appreciate hearing that. I do want to say something
yes.
quickly. I don't know if you're familiar with Samantha Brown, who has a travel program called Places We Love. She came a few weeks ago to travel Illinois Route 66 and stopped here and did an interview, as she did at several places along the road. And that's going to air on PBS in January.
Okay.
And I'll let you know the date
yes.
and more information about it so you can share that. But also, if people want to follow Ryburn Place on Facebook, I will post it there. And I also, every day, practically, I'm posting photos of people who stop, you know, interesting cars, interesting people. So that's Ryburn Place, R-Y-B-U-R-N Place, Normal, Illinois. And also, the other thing, I don't know if Cheryl said this, but because of our success with the Miles of Possibility Conference, we have expanded the conference. So we are now starting our conference on Thursday, whereas in the past, we've always done, you know, a Friday start. So we have a full slate of speakers and walking tour and everything else on that Thursday. So I hope people will go to the website and look at what all are offering. I think it's an incredible schedule and reasonably priced. If you've ever attended a conference, I think we've managed to keep the cost low because of our cooperation with the town and the city. So anyway, I just wanted to say those two things, Jim.
Thank you very much. I'm you know, one of the things, like say, I just I hope we can get more Western involvement. And now, like say, Greg Hassman coming from New Mexico, he's with the New Mexico Route 66 Association. I don't know if you've had the pleasure of meeting Greg.
I have. Greg and I have been online friends for a number of years now, and we have met a time or two in person.
Yeah, he's a great fellow. I think he's going to be a real great on this. And another fellow that's possibly going to attend is a real fellow I'll introduce you to if he does show up is Steve Lesure. He has a little company called My Marketing Designs. And real innovative young man, probably about 40-ish. And he's built a national marketing and media company, specialized drone, all the latest stuff. But his big claim to fame is he's put together a tri-state media organization here in the Southwest, reaching well over 1 million people a month.
Oh,
and
wow.
He's been talking to me the last couple of days. He wants to, he's never done a Route 66 trip, and he thinks the conference would be a great place, and he would like to do some video and live programs if we can get him to attend.
That might
be a good plug. He's based out of Western Arizona, California.
Yeah. That sounds exciting.
Well, Jim, we have someone who took the train out when we had this in Pontiac last year.
Yes.
From California, and he's doing it again this year. So, you know, we are getting a few, and we had Gary Daly and his family attend from Texas. So we are getting some folks from the West. We also have Bonnie and George Game, who come all the way from Canada.
Yes.
Almost every time.
So, you know, we're starting to pull in a more geographically diverse crowd, I think. And honestly, once you've attended one of these, you will come back.
Yes, I agree.
You meet the most interesting people, learn a lot, have a lot of fun. We're all working for the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes this really exciting.
Well, Cheryl, you know, it's Michael Wallace put this as it's a linear community. And this Miles of Possibility Conference is an incredible networking opportunity. And it helps develop that perspective that this is a linear community.
It really does. And, you know, since the beginning, I've tried to keep track. I think we average attendees from maybe 20 to 24 states every single year from the beginning.
Very good.
And we had maybe 6 or 8 people from California the first year. And as Terry said, we've got several people actually coming on one track. So I know we've got people coming from, as far as California, gee whiz, somebody I know in Arizona, some people from Texas. We always have people from Ohio and out that way, sometimes New York State. And I don't think, I'd have to look to make sure, but I think that we have had one single conference that we have not had at least a couple people from other countries besides the U.S. So we've welcomed international friends at every conference as well. So as you say, we would like to have more people come from the Western states, but we're happy that we do have people come from all over to attend. And many repeat attendees.
Terry, Cheryl, thank you. Especially thank you for your patience since we're kind of juggling here. Terry was operating in the dark. I do that a lot. I spend a lot of my life imitating a blind man with a flashlight. I really appreciate this morning. We've got a lot of folks. Maggie May here is with the Ransom E. Olds Museum in East Lansing. And she said she'd talk to me later about this, but of course, I'm like a kid at Christmas. I get a little impatient. She mentioned that the Packard Proving Grounds in Michigan is interested in a Route 66 Centennial type event in 2026.
Wow.
As soon as I can wring some information out of her, I'll share that. Yeah. And I'll get to your website, Terry, up. And I've got information on the Jim Minkley's America website with the Miles of Possibility information. But when I publish this program today, I will include all of this information and I'll get it up on social media and it'll be available on Spotify and all the podcast platforms.
Jim, I'll send you my
Jim, thank
my
you for doing this.
Too.
Very important podcast that you put out every week to keep people abreast of what's happening on the road.
Thank you, Terry. And Cheryl?
Yeah, I'd like to send you my author website, and if you want to throw that up there too. Sometimes Terry's the one that gets out and greets people, and I kind of just sit in my office a great share of the time, and I don't reach out as much as I should sometimes. Let me give you that website. I'll send that to you.
Oh, yes, please. And I'll make sure that gets up and about. You know, with not getting out as much as that Joe Sonderman and I on a program a couple of weeks ago were talking about that. With COVID, we kind of...
We turned inward.
Yeah, it upset the apple cart, and it's kind of interesting how that's changed the dynamics of the road trip a little bit. But this is going to be a great conference for those who Evan Stern. I've had the privilege to meet with that young man several times out here in Arizona, and his program, that Vanishing Postcards, his podcast, is extraordinary. It's extremely well done.
Yes,
and. So some of these folks, like say, and Martin Pavel is always of interest, and I understand he's going to be bringing his significant other with him, and this will be her very first trip to the United States. So I'm sure that she's going to have some eye-opening experiences in Bloomington.
I love that.
And normal.
And normal. We won't forget normal. Hey, guys, thank you very much. Oh, great question. They asked if you were having a movie night at the
we are
in Normal. Is that going to be Young Frankenstein?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
We are having a movie night. I'm so excited about that. That's one of my favorite movies, too.
Very good. That's a beautiful old theater downtown Normal there.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
And we may have one last kind of almost last minute announcement.
Yes, Cheryl.
I am working with an old friend, a musician who plays with a band that is a household name, and he is putting together a special tour. It's called the Get Your Kicks 23 Tour, and they are performing several venues the week of Miles of Possibility. We have not hired them per se, but it's in conjunction with Miles of Possibility Week. And they are booked in so far at the Wildy Theater in Edwardsville and one up in the Chicago area. And we may have them booked on the Wednesday night, October 18th. And these are names you will know. This is a band member of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, a band member of the old band from the 60s, Vanilla Fudge, an amazing young singer from Postmodern Jukebox, and the Broadway star of Jersey Boys, the show that was about Frankie Valli. So I'll tell you what, it is just such a pleasure to be friends with these people, and we are hoping for a Bloomington date that week as well.
Thank you, Cheryl. One thing, you know, I'll leave you with this, you guys, but speaking of bands, and Terry had mentioned meeting fascinating, interesting people. When you get involved with Route 66, you have a front row seat to the biggest sideshow in the circus world. And if you're familiar with Kingman, downtown we have the old Territorial Saloon, the ultimate dive bar. It was opened in 1906, the old Sportsman's Lounge on Route 66. And I've been working with Zenik Jurisic of the Czech Route 66 Association. There is a Czech band that is very popular and extremely well-known in Slovakia, Poland, Ukraine, the Czech Republic, Doga. They're a hard rock, heavy metal band, and they're having a contest bringing 40 of their fans with them, and it's being filmed as a documentary. They're going to be traveling Route 66 in October. They're looking for venues to play. I got them set up at this 1906 saloon here in Arizona. So this should be extremely interesting. A hard rock Czech band, 40 Czechoslovakians in a territorial era saloon in Kingman. This should be entertaining.
Yeah, should be great.
Hey, guys, thank you so, so very much, not just for taking time for your schedule for this, but you and Debbie Joe, guys, thank you for your dedication to this Miles of Possibility. It is appreciated, and it is very important to the Route 66 community. And I really am. I'm grateful. Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you for saying that, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
You bet. You guys, you take care, and we'll get this up a little bit later today. And well, I look forward to seeing you two. It's
okay.
It's been
we'll
a bit.
We'll see you soon.
It has been. We look forward to seeing you.
Yeah, it's everything. I'm slowly getting everything put together, and barring accidental death or dismemberment, I should be there late Wednesday. That's the game plan. But
fantastic. Okay.
Great. We'll see you then.
Bye-bye, Terry. Uh-huh.
Bye.
Thanks, Cheryl.
You bet, Cheryl. You take care of yourself. And we're going to wrap this up with a little bit of music from Joe and Woody and the boys of the road crew, who are always great for inspiring road trips. Leanne, hey, I am glad you could join us.
See hello Leanne's with you, friend.
Well, it's been a pleasure, it's an honor to go out with the road crew playing. Take good care, Jim. We're looking forward to seeing you soon.
You bet. Bye-bye, Miss Cheryl.
Bye.
Nolan, it's always good to see you there. And Mr. Hassman, I guess we'll be seeing you on the road. I don't know how that's all going to work, but we can talk about that a bit. Maggie's with us. And Keith. Gosh, we got a whole audience here this morning. Before I send everybody back to their Sunday morning, anybody got any questions or anything they want to ask me before we go? Otherwise, I will bid you adios, and we will do this again next week. I got a couple great things coming down the pike for you on this. I'm talking to Connie Loveland. We had a little bit of a scheduling issue, so I'm not sure yet about next Sunday. Connie Loveland is a mover and shaker in Tucumcari. She is the director of the Main Street program. Tentatively, she will be with us next week. The week after that, I've got a big surprise. Tom Cotter is going to be with me, and he is the author of the Barn Find books. So that will be a real, real exciting program. I'm talking with the mayor and tourism directors in Needles, California, possibly towards the end of the month from that. So stay tuned. We've got lots and lots of great programs. And like I say, if you want to schedule a presentation or program while I'm on the road, the window is closing. I'm setting my schedule up as we speak. So just contact me and let me know. We'll probably have to be doing at least one, maybe two programs from the road. And, we'll see how that goes in October. Meanwhile, my friends, take care. And, we'll do this again next week. Adios, mi amigos.